Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk today, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. A little different open for us. Everyone's excited for tonight. Key Arena, Tom.
Man, I just heard my name, where I'm from, and Pink Floyd all in the same open. That makes me feel great.
Is that too much for you?
No, it's 7 o'clock, 7:01. Let's go.
All right. If you guys weren't here, that was what the Sonics came into.
I know, absolutely. A little Deep Purple. Followed by some Pink Floyd. I got you, man. You got the Dolby surround sound thing going on in there. Will all of that get done tonight, do you think?
I hope so.
How much of tonight at Key Arena? So tonight is going to be Warriors-Kings at Key Arena. How much of tonight mimics the old Sonics days? And how much are you like, well, hold on. I don't know that I want everything done that's always been done, because it should be reserved for the moment when the basketball team actually returns to Seattle.
If I were in charge of the event, I think I would go full on one way or the other. I mean, if it were me personally, I would go full on 1996.
You want the blimp flying around, dropping envelopes full of like $10 gift cards.
Well, why else are they here if not to do that? Honestly, I mean, like, you're asking a bunch of fans who are embittered from 10 years ago to show up in this thing and be happy. Make them happy. Mm. Give them what they want.
But do they want it when it's the Kings and the Warriors?
I think the two teams involved in this thing are an afterthought. Kevin Durant being here is one thing.
Right.
That means something.
And he's definitely coming out with Sonics gear on, right? I mean, that's just, I saw the Sonics sneakers that he was wearing yesterday. Mm. I got to imagine he's going to come out with an old warm-up jersey, you know, an old warm-up suit or something over his uniform.
Sure.
So I would imagine there'll be some of that.
But that's not the reason why people are so excited to go. You could put the Bucks and the Clippers here, and I think people would still go, and you could still have the same sort of pageantry in the building.
I just wonder whether or not you save it, knowing that, you know, eventually there will be actual NBA basketball with a local team here, and whether you sort of hold on to it for that moment. But certainly take some of your thoughts. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Going to be a fun one tonight at Key Arena as the Kings and Warriors. Warriors without Steph Curry, by the way. What's up with that? He doesn't want to come? He didn't like Seattle?
I don't think that he doesn't like Seattle.
It seems like maybe he doesn't care for us up here.
He's got a personal thing.
He has a personal thing
with
Seattle?
Yeah, he said it was family related.
Oh, okay. So it's not just like he doesn't feel like traveling?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, that's not the story, at least.
Right. I'm betting he just doesn't feel like traveling up here, but whatever.
That's personal. That would fall under personal.
I've got a personal.
I personally don't wish to be there.
Yeah, I don't feel like it.
Personally don't want to play in this particular game, so I'll stay right here at home. All right, so that's tonight. Tomorrow, of course, you got college football games, and then Sunday, Seahawks hosting the Rams, Tom. Do Seahawks fans seem like almost resigned to losing this game?
No, but we do.
You think so?
Yeah, we do. We're the only idiots in town who think that the Rams are this good. Seahawks fans are still Seahawks fans, I think. Now, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett aren't here to be brash and hot-headed on everybody's behalf anymore, so that confidence the public confidence may have disappeared a little bit. But you can't tell me that the crowd that showed up a couple weeks ago at CenturyLink wasn't pumped, confident, and ready to go. I'm not going to be afraid of the Rams until there's reason to be afraid of the Rams.
I tend to agree with you, but I wonder when I talk to people, and maybe they're different people than the ones who are banging out CenturyLink Field on Sunday. I hear a lot of fear factor, a lot of like, this goes on Sunday.
Can I ask
Sunday.
You a question? Do you talk to smart people?
I don't know.
People who you would like,
I feel like
associate
I'm
with?
A mix of smart people and not smart people.
I talk to fans, which is I think a mix of smart and dumb.
Right.
Okay, and I include myself in that group. Fans are fans. We believe in our team. That's just the way it is. I think the Giants are going to the Super Bowl every year. They're not.
Right.
But it's just that's
part of being
a fan.
But you think that for the first four games, you don't think that like once you see the Giants are 0-4 or 1-3.
No, when they're 4-8, they're going to make a run. You know, it's going to be like usually.
They're going to push all their chips to the middle of the table like Jim Fossil.
That's exactly right. This is the Seattle Seahawks we're talking about. It's still CenturyLink Field. It's the Rams who they still have something to prove. Right? I mean, they're not even the Eagles, and they're struggling right now. They're not the Patriots coming in here. Jared Goff is still a young player. I think he can still go out and have that stinker of a game that we haven't seen since 2016. Maybe this is the weekend where that happens.
Hmm. What I think all those things are possible. I have heard a little bit more fear factor for the Rams, and maybe even some resignation. Where I think it comes from is that they can actually afford to lose this game. Whereas a couple weeks ago, these last 2 weeks, they needed to win. Once they got down 0-2 to start the season, if you wanted this season to even be entertaining, to matter at all in terms of at least having a shot at a wild card or something for this year, you needed to come out and win the last two games. You had to beat Dallas at home, and you had to go on the road and beat Arizona. Lose either of those two games, and at 1-3, it's nearly impossible to bounce back from that to be in a playoff situation. But once you win those two, you can afford to lose this game. You don't want to. It doesn't help. And certainly you never want to lose any game. But I think you've sort of given yourself a shot to play with the house's money here for the first time. And I think that gives them an opportunity to do something that we haven't seen in a long time. And that's play without pressure. To truly play loose. And when I think about the Seahawks over the last few years, I would argue that the last time they truly played without an immense amount of pressure on them was the opening game of maybe the 2015 season. It's been forever.
No pressure after they came off the Super Bowl loss?
Well, I think that's when they've had pressure. So that game had pressure.
Okay, I got you.
2014 was probably the last time they played without it.
Because they were just coming off a Super Bowl win.
Yeah, and because they were young and rowdy and brash and
they did start off a little bit slow that year, and then they got going at the end, like they always did.
Right, but it was just sort of like, it's December and they're killing people and they're going out and murdering teams every week, and it was a no pressure zone for them. They were the baddest on the block, and everybody who came into CenturyLink Field was just waiting to get chewed up and spit out. And then all of a sudden you lose in 2014 and you get the holdout soon, and just all the, like, everything changes and it gets tight. Are we going to be able to keep this dynasty going? Are we going to be able to bounce back? Are we going to be able to put the memory of that play, the Malcolm Butler play, behind us? And I felt for the last few years if the Seahawks have just played tight almost all the time. And that's not to say they haven't had great moments. Clearly they have, and especially at the ends of games, Russell Wilson's won. But my feeling is that they've played with an immense amount of pressure and immense amount of tightness over the last couple of years. And now, all of a sudden, you play this game at 2-2 against a Rams team that is heavily favored, the heaviest favorite road team in Seattle since the Beastquake game against New Orleans.
Wow.
It's been that long since there has been a road favorite as big as this one. You are pressure-free, my man. Go out there and just go do your thing, cut loose, and see whether or not you can find a way to knock off a team that right now everybody thinks is a champion, and yet they've won four lousy games.
You know what? We were talking to Tedrick Thompson yesterday.
T2?
You can say that. He came on. Sorry, Wyman and I were joking about T2 and how he's going to refuse to use that. And if Rabel uses it on the air, he's going to hit him.
We only found out about it when the players started calling him that we had him on in training camp.
Pete Carroll called him that.
Who's T2? We didn't know who it was.
We talked to him yesterday, and I was asking him about the chip on your shoulder thing. What you're saying about pressure, the only reason why you would have a chip on your shoulder in the first place is if you were feeling the pressure. This team just doesn't put off that vibe. They didn't all through training camp. They don't right now. There's a quiet confidence to them. I mean, for a young team, they're not the outspoken type. But I don't think that they feel the pressure at all. And from the fan standpoint, it all depends on your perspective. I'm somebody who thought that they would go 8-8 and maybe be like a decent 8-8, have a shot at the end. We'll see.
They're on pace to prove you right.
Exactly. So I guess in that sense, I agree with you. If they drop to 2-3 here and they lose to the Rams, is that really the end of the world? No. But if they win, it's like a launching pad towards, oh, look, we just beat the Rams.
Yeah, 9-7 may very well make the playoffs in the NFC based on the way some of the power teams have started this year. So, yeah, I think the Seahawks have put themselves in a nice spot. I think they can lose this game and it's not going to be the end of the world next week. But I'll tell you what, I think they have a very real opportunity to go out and win it. And maybe they cut loose and play differently. And all of a sudden it's the Rams who have some of that pressure coming in with an expectation level at 4-0 and going on the road and everything that the Rams now find themselves in. They have a reputation all of a sudden to live up to. And we'll see whether or not the Seahawks can take it and use it to their advantage on Sunday. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Now, let's give you some news and notes for this Seahawks game as they get ready to take on the 4-0 undefeated L.A. Rams on Sunday at CenturyLink Field, 125 start. Russell Wilson back on the injury report with that hamstring. How much is it really affecting him? Well, he hasn't run a whole lot, so So maybe it's affecting him more than we really know. Chris Carson expected to return to the lineup after an excellent 100-yard game from Mike Davis. And then George Fant expected to play a little bit of tight end, especially in a blocking role. I'm kind of excited for that. Athletic guy who's big enough to play tackle and maybe can give them a little bit of a help on the edge in running the ball. Look, they're going to need to run the ball. I know that there's a group out there that doesn't want to see them run. If you want to take down high-powered offenses, generally the best way to do it is to run right at them, to keep their defense on the field, and to tire out the Aaron Donalds, Michael Brockers, and Dominican Sue's of the world. You got to find a way to run it down their throat, and I sure hope they're able to do that on Sunday.
Yeah, we're still not entirely sure how great this defense is. When you talk about the great teams of all time, usually you have a pretty good offense and a pretty good defense, too, at the very least. Or you have one that's great and the other that's just adequate. If you can expose this defense for what they are or what they could be, maybe that's good. As far as the pressure thing, one thing we didn't even mention in that last conversation, Mike, no Earl Thomas? Are you kidding me? How much pressure could be on a team that's missing their best player going up against this great offense? I mean, the expectation of what should happen on Sunday really should be pretty low. It should be pretty low when you think about it. So George Fant playing tight end. We don't know what's going on with the running backs. No Earl Thomas. No Michael Kendricks. We'll see.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Huskies 21-point favorites against UCLA tomorrow as they head to the Rose Bowl for their first win over the Bruins in Pasadena since 1995. Is that possible? They haven't beaten the Bruins on the road since 1995? Well, they should have a little pressure on them to do so tomorrow. They're supposed to be the better team in this one, and at 21-point favorites. The problem with college football is that when you find yourself a major big-time favorite like that, it seems like almost all you can ever do is disappoint. Like, oh, they only won by 17? They're supposed to win by 3 touchdowns at least. What's the deal with that? And I just think it's one of the most unreasonable parts of the game. But the Huskies are certainly a better team than a UCLA team that is in rebuild mode. And looking forward to see if Jake Browning can go through his third straight very good performance.
I would hope that even at the college level, you're not a professional, but at the same time, it's still up to you to keep yourself motivated. I know we talk about the coaches all the time, and how do you keep guys motivated when you know the week after you're going to a bitter rival, you're going to play Oregon, and you've still got Stanford on the schedule. How do you not look past this team? Well, that's part of what a college coach has to do. He's got to keep motivated. He's got to come up with reasons why we need to go in there and just demolish this team.
It's a trap game?
It's the textbook definition of a trap game to me, but I don't think that they're going to have any problem down there whatsoever. 1995.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Anything happened in this town that year? I feel like I've heard something about 1995. I don't know what it, did anything go on here?
I don't think so.
All right. It must be just like a weird thing in the back of my head, back of my memory. Hey, according to multiple reports over the last day or so, the new NHL practice facility in Seattle will be located right by Tom's house in Northgate. It's going to go in. Are you housing the new practice facility?
Yeah, they're actually knocking my apartment building over.
You're going to get eminent domained.
Is that what it is? Yeah, exactly. My space is actually just going to be a parking
lot. It's pretty cool. The facility is expected to have at least 3 ice rinks. This has been kind of a theme around the country over the last few years, is building these practice facilities and then putting stuff around it. And I'll just give you some of my experience in Boston. The Bruins used to practice at a place way out in the middle of nowhere in Wilmington, Mass., like an hour from Boston, for years and years and years. And then just a couple of years ago, they said, why are we doing this? Let's make this a major thing. And so they put something right near the city in this huge rink, and they put stores and commerce and restaurants and stuff all around it, and they've really embedded into the fabric of the community. I think it's really cool what this Seattle team is going to be doing here.
Yeah, I don't really mind that they're putting it out there, because I don't think this isn't going to be, I don't think anyway, a public attraction.
Oh, I bet it will.
Not in the same way that Key Arena will, though, for games. As much conversation as we've had about things like traffic and parking
ice rinks
and all that
and stuff, I bet they'll be using it for the community. I bet you they'll be...
So they're going to open it up for, like,
I bet some of it'll
skating
be,
lessons and
I'll,
stuff like
I'll
that?
I'll bet you they do.
Oh.
Because they want everybody to be a part of learning hockey here in Seattle.
Man,
and part
really?
Of that is allowing the community to have access. To
you know what? I'll be out of that neighborhood by then anyway. It's fine. It's no big deal. Hey, by the way, when you went to cover the Bruins at that facility, was it super cold in there?
Oh, it's always freezing.
It is.
Right.
When I used to go down on occasion to the Hartford Wolfpack, which is like the AAA team of the Rangers, you'd go into that facility there and you would just freeze.
Oh, yeah. Super cold.
Yeah. If you don't bring your jacket, like, and your hat and your gloves in there.
They play on ice.
But you forget about that because it's, you know, it's indoors. You go to a hockey game, it's not that cold.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know or ask about every single morning at 7:10. Tom Wassel in, one of the most curious people I know. So sometimes sometimes need to know turns into more of a question period. Tom's actually got some hockey questions coming up here in about 15 minutes right after we talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, take a quick look at the injury report. Russell Wilson keeps finding himself on there on Thursdays with that hamstring. Is this thing affecting him at all?
Maybe a small degree. He says no, and of course, I guess you have to trust him. I look at it as more just the Tom Brady injury report factor because, I mean, how many years did they have to put Tom Brady's shoulder out there? I think I did it like about 14 straight years just to comply with the, because again, if you get treatment for it, that's what Russell said yesterday. I guess if you get pre-treatment for it, you know, you have to then go on the injury report, even though, again, he's not missed practice at all. But still, what you wonder about is this strategy that they right now are doing in not having him run early, because, you know, he's only averaging like about 3.7 yards and he only has like about 11 or 12 carries. You know, is that in part just to be cautious with the hamstring, or is it maybe setting up something so when they play a team like the Rams, you know, they can go more variety with some of their run-pass options?
Does Frank Clark have mono or something?
I don't know. I mean, they're not saying exactly what it is. That's why I think that's going to be the most curious thing that we're going to wait to have the answer from Pete Carroll when he talks around, too, about the injuries. You know, there's a bunch of guys I know that, you know, following every injury report, there's usually like one or two teams that has a guy that has an illness and is going to miss a couple days. So I don't know if he just has the flu or whatever it is. But as long as he practices today, I think he's going to be fine.
What do you make of this George Fant thing? He's going to be playing a little tight end?
Who's going to play a little tight end last week, because I know after the game I talked to Nick Vanette, and Nick basically said that even though he had no practice at it, I mean, the only other option was going to be George Fant. And so I think what they ended up doing, because now, you know, they take Darryl Daniels off the practice squad, bring him up, but he's more of a special teams guy, maybe more of a pass catcher. And so now I guess if you need a second blocker as a tight end, George Fant can be one.
He should be good at that, right?
No, I thought, well, he was a former tight end in college, and I think, you know, he's a natural athlete. And I think when he made that transition over in the Charger game to make the move, well, no, I guess it's the Minnesota game, to go over and play right tackle, I think, you know, that tight end ability, the basketball ability, made it kind of easy for him. So that could be kind of interesting if they use him for maybe 2, 3, 4 plays.
Were you as bored by the Pats Colts last night as we were?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't know which one was more predictable. The A's in that baseball game against the Yankees, starting with a relief pitcher, you knew in the first inning that thing was done. And this one where they come in, they only have 44 healthy players and lose about 4 as the game's going on. I mean, this one, I mean, I was surprised it stayed within 2 touchdowns.
It's interesting seeing some of these ex-Seahawks not exactly having great success elsewhere. So Richard Sherman is already hurt and going to miss a significant amount of time. And Michael Bennett's not doing anything in Philly, huh?
Not really. I mean, 50% play time, and I think he has 1 sack. And, you know, I don't know what he was expecting, but when you look at the numbers of defensive linemen that they had, I mean, there was no way he was going to get more than 50% of the snaps, particularly, you know, at age 31 going on 32. So, he's disappointed by it, but again, he should have expected it.
Just back to the Colt game real quick. I thought that Luck made some nice throws, but still, it doesn't seem to be a ton of zip on some of those balls. What do you think's going on with his arm?
No, I mean, he missed 635 days. And so, and particularly, it took him a year and a half to a year and 3/4 to be able to start throwing the football. It's a strength thing that I think he's getting better every week. I mean, his accuracy is spectacular. His ability to move is very good. You can see that his recognition of the play is good. But yeah, his arm strength right now isn't there. I don't know if he's 85% or 90%, but he's definitely not 100% for arm strength.
Tom and I are going to talk about this in the 8 o'clock hour, but man, you know, we've seen Rashad Penny so far, and I was excited about that draft pick. I liked him in college, liked the pick. And him compared to Sony Michel, who has 212 yards or so in the last two games. Nick Chubb, who's got a couple of touchdowns recently. Philip Lindsay, who's an undrafted free agent, looks great. Royce Freeman, Kerryon Johnson. There's a lot of pretty good rookie running backs. And right now, Rashad Penny's not on that list.
No, but I think you see flashes. And I think that's kind of expected. Number one, he's not the starter. Chris Carson's the starter. And then number two, he's still trying to get through the beginning of a rookie season. And, you know, he missed the 3 weeks in training camp because of the finger injury, didn't have any preseason. He was caught up in the fact that he didn't know the speed of the game when he got in the first game. That played into it. I mean, you know, in the second half of the Chicago games, he showed some things. In the Arizona game, he showed some things. He just hasn't had that consistent chance right now to go out and carry the ball. And I think you have to say, safe to say, that technically now with a 100-yard game, Mike Davis is the number two back and Penny's number three.
I guess that's just concerning because the same thing could be true for most of those other guys. It's not like Sony Michel or Saquon Barkley, or I'm sorry, he is, but Chubb or a few of the other guys are getting that chance either. I mean, they're coming in as the second running back and finding ways to really have success. I hope that is there for Penny down the line.
Remember that everybody going into the stats, and I think I'm glad that Brian Schottenheimer said what he said yesterday, because it kind of jived what I was saying. It's like, hey, right now the key is commitment to the run and execution. Don't worry about the play action passes as much. Don't worry about some of the numbers. Get the running game going. Get the execution going. Then you can add to it as time goes on, and then it can add to getting Penny on the field a little bit more as time goes
on. It's time for my favorite part of the week. It's Friday, and it's time for your wild card.
Oh, boy.
Time now for the wild card. What?
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay.
In the latest Coen Brothers dark comedy, John Clayton is an accountant who moonlights as a b-boy dancer who goes by the name of J. Clay Stepson. When J. Clay decides to challenge the baddest dancer in the city, played by Ryan Gosling, J. Clay realizes that he has 1-2 stepped into a bigger problem than he realized. After embarrassing Gosling, J. Clay's moonlight gig spills over into his regular life as Gosling and his dance goons start going after Clayton in his regular job. John Clayton is faced with a dilemma: quit dancing forever to appease his no-nonsense boss, played by Clint Eastwood, or join forces with the up-and-coming dance star Boy Howdy in a dance-off to the death with Ryan Gosling. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm just trying to get the picture of you and me dancing at the same time. Can you imagine how ugly that's going to look if you put the reality? And now, of course, we're not into reality. We're into Fan Fiction Friday, and I'm actually going to be a good dancer. So, I think I got to stay with my strength. I got to keep dancing. I don't care about Clint. I got to go back. Clint can go ahead and make my day if he wants to.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about dancing after that.
Do you think we could CGI you and Howdy dancing so you guys don't actually have to learn how to do it? Will you stun people for that?
Well, let's put this way. I mean, the stunning part is going to be see how ugly it is seeing the two of us dance. I mean, I don't know. Howdy, can you dance at all?
It's not pretty.
Oh, you can to a certain degree.
Yeah.
My degree is zero.
How come there's no women in this movie? No actresses in this movie?
No, because they saw us dance.
Yeah, they all
yeah,
it's like, they all turned
pretty,
tail
it's pretty
and
simple. If you watch us dance, it's like, hey, you're going to be going to the other room.
All right. Goodbye, John. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. All right. There you go. John Clayton with us every single morning.
I don't have to worry about
7:15. Yeah, of course. Let's see, Tom. Let's remind everybody you can listen to the show here on the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. NBA at Key Arena tonight, and what should really be the final event at that building before they break ground here in the next few weeks. Tom is ready for the NHL, and he's got some questions next. I'm Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, Brock and Salk, Tom Wassel in this morning. Hope you guys are having a good day. It's Friday, big weekend. Huskies, of course, down at UCLA. Seahawks playing LA. And then we get a little taste of basketball, NBA hoops at Key Arena tonight. Tom, it's been a pretty exciting week. I'm pumped more than anything, of course, about the NHL. And we spent some time yesterday just sort of asking, what do you need to do here over these next 2 years to get yourself ready for hockey to be here? And I know you had a lot of questions.
Well,
you're a question guy.
I don't really have answers. I only have questions.
You're more of a question
guy.
These
are kind of, they're not basic questions exactly, and they're maybe not even essential questions, but I feel like if I'm going to be a fan of the game, I should have some context as to what I'm watching here.
Okay.
So you want me? I'm going to hit you and Lydia and all Kyle right. if you want.
Yeah, me most important.
If you know
and mostly
anything.
Kyle, who's been to two NHL
games.
Been
to two games, and I'm quite well versed.
Both of them in the hockey mecca that you would call Glendale, Arizona.
The Gila River Arena.
It's pretty awesome. And then Brock's going to join us here in about 15 minutes for some Blue 42. He's getting ready to call Florida State Miami tomorrow, so we'll talk to Brock here in about 15.
Okay. What theme is this? Is this NHL Tonight or
this
something?
This is labeled Hockey Night in Canada.
From the CBC.
But I know so much about hockey that I'm not quite sure.
All right, we'll start with an opinion question. Name the top four players in the history of the game, roughly. And just in your opinion. You don't have to be... You better be able to name four
so
players.
I know it. Let's see. I mean, there's a lot up for debate there. I'm going to still put Bobby Orr in there.
One?
Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky,
okay.
Mario Lemieux... Gordie Howe?
That's what I would do.
Those
you're okay
four?
With that, Lydia? No, Brett Hall?
Steve Yzerman? No,
or
I'm not
Brett Hall Brett. Or Bobby Hall? Who's better?
Bobby's probably
bless
better.
Them both.
Really?
Yeah. The dad.
He was better than Brett?
I think so.
Brett was a heck of a
I
scorer.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know.
What about Sidney or Ovechkin? No?
Sidney's has to be on the... I mean, he's got to be right there.
I mean, I could have said top 10, but I didn't want to put you on the spot.
It's hard
I mean,
to judge players that are still currently playing.
If you go to five, I'll put Sidney on that list.
Okay.
I mean, you could put Steve Yzerman on that list. There's a lot of names.
Do you put a goalie on that list?
No.
No. Get out.
I would ask you, like, top four goalies.
Oh, yeah.
They get their
not.
Own separate
who's the best
category.
Goalie? Patrick Waugh?
Mike Liut.
Peter Sidorkowicz. Rawal's one of the best I've ever seen. He sort of like brought the whole idea of the butterfly goalie to the NHL. I know he may not be officially that guy, but he'd be right on the list.
Martin Brodeur has got to be way
sure.
Up.
And what is the idea of a butterfly goalie?
Butterfly. So if you watch hockey from back in the day, like if you watch Bobby Orr highlight reels, you'll see all of his goals come, and you're like, did the goalie even move? Like, why is the goalie so bad? Like, they all stand up the whole time. They barely block the net. They have teeny little pads. And the goals are so easy. Once they went to the butterfly style, that's where they sort of drop down, fan out their legs to cover the bottom of the net, and then sort of block. You have to go high in order to beat
I'd
them.
I'd call that the praying mantis style.
They call it the butterfly.
It looks like a butterfly shrimp.
They kick out their legs like their knees bend out, and that's how you do the butterfly.
All right, question number two. There's a line system in hockey. How many lines do teams have, and what are they?
Typically, you're going to have four sets of lines, and then you're going to have three defensive pairings. And usually, each of those has got a certain personality, depending on how you've built your team. Whether you've built your team to be like old school and you want like more rough bruiser types, or whether you've built it, the new thing is more speed. So, like your different lines will have personalities. Number one is probably your number ones. Two, there's a joke in hockey that like number two, like you could spend as much time arguing about line number two being really line number one.
Are your penalty killing lines within that four, or is that separate?
That's separate. Separate. Like, okay. Yeah.
But generally, your third line are checkers.
Those are
checkers.
Your checkers.
That's a defensive
and
line who you want to put up against the other team.
And then your fourth
one.
Line is where things get really interesting and fun, and just I love it. It's wacky, crazy. They're basically set up to go against the other team's first line. So you're set up to almost like try and incur penalties from them and sort of just throw them off balance.
Okay. Fourth lines are interesting because a lot of the times they don't play nearly as much. And so I never knew this until I covered the game and went into the dressing rooms afterwards. They'll have a little sign on the whiteboard in the dressing room that says if you played fewer than, I forget whether it's 10 or 12 minutes, you got to go hit the exercise bikes.
What?
And that's usually the fourth line guys who
really?
Just don't play that much. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not a question of just combinations. It's guys who may not actually see the ice.
Yeah, the fourth line guys usually will get about half the shifts.
Hey, rough game for you. I know you didn't play a lot, sat on the bench. Now you get to go ride the bike.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. Fourth line guys don't care.
No, the fourth line guys are usually fighters and stuff. They've been in the penalty box half the time. It's fine.
All right.
They're energy guys.
Energy? Any energy boys?
They're like Munenori Kawasaki. You love having them around. They're an energy guy.
How does the point system work in the standings?
In 1985 or
no,
now?
No, right now.
It's so much more complicated now.
I think I know the answer to this
easy.
Question.
It's pretty easy. You get 2 points for a win.
Right.
You get no points for a regular time loss.
Great loss.
You get
one point for an overtime loss.
Which is
overtime
a shootout
loss,
right?
Or an overtime
loss. Or an overtime. You just lose in sudden death?
Yes.
Is overtime sudden death?
Yes.
Okay. That simplifies things, actually.
Yeah. It used to just be 2 points for a win, 1 point for a
for
tie.
For a tie.
Yeah.
Which was
which just, they should go back to.
Yeah, they should.
I hate the whole overtime loss and shootout. Just go back to the tie. I didn't mind ties. It's fine. It's part of the game.
All right, Lydia, you're going to have to help us with this one. There's a whole bunch of trophies they give out at the end of the year. We're just going to focus on four of them. Tell me what they are.
Is this a quiz?
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics.
You don't know what the Conn Smythe is?
Conn Smythe, yes.
What is it?
I don't know.
Conn Smythe's playoff MVP.
Which is best goalie?
That's the Vezina.
Vezina.
That's, yeah.
What about the Hart Trophy?
Salk?
MVP. MVP is the Hart Trophy.
And then the Lady Bing is the...
Sportsmanship. It's like it is. It's like the nicest guy in the game, basically. Like somebody who's kind of nice out there.
You, this not a lot of is where I know. Get a little nervous.
You also
this, these awards remind me of the Supporters Shield.
There's a lot of
there's
awards.
Like the Stanley Cup, the Presidents, the Prince of Wales, you got the Clarence B. Campbell,
you got
the Conn Smythe, the Hart, the Calder, the Vezina, the Norris, the Ross, the Selke, the Bing. What is going on here?
But you need all those. The Selke is for the best.
No, you do not.
The Selke
need
is for the best defensive winger. The Norris is for the best defenseman. The Vezina is for the best goalie.
How about the Adams, the Richard, or the Clancy? What about the Lindsay, the Jennings?
I don't know about those.
The Masterton?
The Masterton, I remember. That one's given out to like the... It's like a hockey writer's award or something, right?
Yeah.
I have one more question.
All right.
Do most teams use more than one goalie regularly, or yes. Do you run one guy out there every night?
Usually it's about two-thirds, one-third.
Depends on two-thirds, how good one-third. Your goalie is, yeah.
Yeah, two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the time you want to play your number one guy.
So it's like Chris Carson and Rashad Penny.
No.
It's not anywhere close to that? It's like Chris
Depends
Carson.
Depends if one
hold
of your
on.
Goalies is
It's
gassed.
Like Chris Carson and then everybody else.
Like Todd Gurley and everybody else. If you've got a really good goalie.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably similar like to teams with running backs. Like, if you don't really have a goalie, you're running both guys out there and hoping something works out.
Like, PK Subban's brother is the backup goalie in Vegas, I think he was last year, but how often did you hear that about him?
Goalies are like catchers in baseball. That's a tax. I would say that's a better analogy.
But that's like 4-1.
Yeah.
If your catcher's good.
It might be, yeah, might be 3-1 instead of 4-1, but it's probably pretty similar to that. Dude, hockey's fun. You guys are going to love it.
Final question. All what right. does a coach do?
You run the lines out there.
Is that all you do?
It's a big part of it.
It's a lot of strategy. It's almost like a chess game because you're also responding to what they're doing with their lines. Like why Salk said the fourth line doesn't always play because it's not like you're going in order. It's not like one, right. two, three, four. You're constantly countering to what you know about their team and about their line.
And here's one of the weird little tweaks is that the home team gets last change. So if there's a face-off on the ice, there's a dead, you know, the puck is dead, yeah. And you're going to have a face-off, the visiting team chooses its five players, then the home team gets to choose their five players.
So they have a chance to respond.
You get the opportunity to respond to whatever the visiting team is doing all the time.
On each face-off? Or
on
just
every face-off.
That's interesting.
Other than after icing.
So other than the crowd, that's one advantage of being at home.
It's a big advantage. The other, it's a huge advantage. You also get to decide which end of the rink you want to shoot at twice.
Does that matter, though?
Not really.
There's no wind in there.
No, but in the second period, you're going the other way, and so you have the issue with the long change. So, right, a lot of times in hockey, you're changing those three lines. You're doing it on the fly. It's not just during a face-off. But if you have the long change in the second period, sometimes you can sneak a goal in there because a team is desperately trying to get a change and it's just too far to go from the defensive zone.
But aren't both benches on different sides?
No, the benches
are
now
on the same side.
They're now on the same side.
Ah.
They used to be on opposite sides. Now they put both benches on the same side.
That is interesting.
And so in the second period, you've got the long change.
Is the penalty box on the other side?
The penalty box is opposite the benches.
Okay.
Yes, that's the best place on the ice, obviously. You want to be in the penalty box. That's the goal. All right, good stuff. Some hockey questions. Maybe we'll do more of that over the next 2 years. We've got some time. I don't want to, like, you know... waste it all today, Tom. We've got a lot of good questions.
Those are all the questions you need
to
answer.
We've got 2 years to try to figure this all out together. Coming up next, we'll talk to Brock, who's in Miami and ready to go. We got 3 good football questions for him next here on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. Tom Wassel and I have been taking you through the morning, getting ready for a busy weekend, and Brock is going to join us here from Miami, where he's got U-Miami against Florida State on Saturday. Hi, buddy. Good morning.
Good morning, man. Yeah, Fort Lauderdale to be exact. Getting ready to hop in the car here to Coral Gables to see the staff. Had a good chat with Willie Taggart this morning. So lots going on in South Florida.
All right, well, let's start with what's going to be going on in L.A., where the Huskies are going to be taking on UCLA. Who's ready for a breakout game in this one?
Yeah, I'm ready for Taylor Rapp. I'm ready for Taylor Rapp to have an awfully big game. You know, he's had an incredibly solid year. You know, he came on the scene as a freshman, as a game changer, as, you know, the Pac-12 championship game MVP with pick sixes and just plays all over the field. And while he's had a bunch of sacks, actually, rushing the passer, and he's been really solid in what he's doing, I'm just ready. I'm ready for him to have one of those splash games. I think he's an NFL guy. I won't be surprised if he tests those waters, maybe even leaves if he hears word from the NFL that he's a first or second round pick. I think he's a phenomenal player. And just scheme wise with what UCLA does, Mike, and as much space as they like to play in and as many kind of zone reads and run pass options their freshman quarterback has, I think this is a game that Taylor Rapp, with all of his years of experience and his playmaking ability and how well he plays in space, I'm ready to hear about number 7th, big game Saturday.
Question number 2. Brock, do the Seahawks have any matchup advantages on Sunday against the Rams?
Not really, Tom. Not really. No, not one I can definitively say, yep, their X is a lot better than their Y. Maybe Doug Baldwin is probably in Tyler Lockett, to be honest with you, with as banged up as some of the Rams' secondary is. I like some of those one-on-one matchups. I'll be curious about Marcus Peters and where Marcus Peters plays and if he were to shadow Doug or Tyler, and if he's healthy enough to do that. That would probably be the one spot. The other area is, you know, DJ Fluker and Jermaine Effetti and Justin Britt just need to get in a bar brawl with the Ndamukong Suh and Brockers and crew and Aaron Donald. They just have to play in the phone booth. They cannot play on a track where they have been run around and made look silly over the last few years. They have to turn this game into just an old-fashioned. You saw the viral video of Ndamukong Suh punching the quarterback bag. They need to do that. This needs to be an absolute fist fight with Brockers and Suh and Donald in a very confined space, and let those guys just hit them, because that's not something they've had a chance to do or were even capable of doing the last few years. Those would be about the only two areas I think I feel good matchup-wise.
All right, finally, question number 3. The other side of the ball, Rams have been attacking everybody with all kinds of motion and formations and interesting play action. How will they look to attack this Seahawks defense?
Yeah, I think they're going to try to get Todd Gurley a 200-yard game. And I don't know if that's all running, Mike, or that screen passes or what. You know, a lot of guys have been featured in these games, and they've been spreading the wealth all over the field, and they will continue to do so. They're not going to just be egotistical or athletically arrogant and say, we're going to just run it right down their throat. But I would expect them to get into a bunch of nickel packages and put nickel on the field and really run it an undersized group. You know, even with Michael Kendricks in there and Earl Thomas, it was an undersized group. Well, you take Kendricks out and put either Austin Calitro or Mo Alexander, and then, you know, Tedrick Thompson. It's going to be half a step behind wherever Earl was. I think this is the game. The guy ran for, 152 in the first half last year against Seattle, that being Todd Gurley. I think this is the game that McVay says, okay, when they put their big people on, we're going to throw it. When they put their little people on the field, we're going to run it. And it's going to be a check with me all game long. And, and I think Mr. Gurley is poised to have a pretty productive day.
Well, that's Coors Light's Blue 42.
Hey, Brock, you ever go to...
I got a trivia question for you two.
Oh.
All right.
Hi, Tom, I know you love trivia.
I do.
Especially old school trivia. The Seahawks under Pete Carroll have been 7 or more point favorites 3 times. 3 times, excuse me, underdogs. Have been underdogs by 7 or more points 3 times in all of Pete's years here since 2002. Can you name those 3 occasions, and can you name the 3 quarterbacks?
Wait a minute, did you say since 2002?
Since 2010, when he got here, when Pete Carroll got here and began.
All right, well, we talked about one earlier.
1 point underdogs.
We talked about one earlier.
And who was the quarterback?
That would be the Saints at home in the playoffs. Matt Hasselbeck was a quarterback.
Yep.
What about when Brady was up here in 2012?
Nope.
No? Nope.
At Lambeau, Aaron Rodgers?
Nope. Nope. Home. Home home underdogs, seven, all home games. Home underdogs.
Were they home underdogs last year against Atlanta by that much?
Nope. It goes back to his very first year.
You're asking me to remember 2010? I don't remember last week.
Yes.
Get out of here. I'm supposed to remember who they played in 2010?
In 2010?
No one of these.
Pittsburgh?
The Giants?
Was it Pittsburgh?
the Giants at home.
The Giants beat them like 41-7.
Yes, they did.
Who was the quarterback?
Time.
Charlie Whitehurst?
Yep. That was Charlie Whitehurst.
That was his first game.
Earlier in the season, it was T-Jack against the Ravens, and the Seahawks won. So the Seahawks beat the Ravens, they beat the Saints, and got the doors blown off by the New York Giants.
So they're 2-3. They're 2-1 in those opportunities.
2-1. 2-1 is home underdogs.
But what does that tell me about Sunday? Go. Nothing. I don't. What?
Absolutely positive.
Because
nothing.
Tavares Jackson did something 7 years ago? What's the matter?
Bro, I didn't say it means anything. I said it was trivia.
Wassel had an important question for you, for God's sakes.
Oh, you're interrupting
him with this silly trivia? What's the matter with you?
I was just curious if you've ever been to a campus that made you think, like, I shouldn't have gone to UW. I should have gone somewhere else.
There's some beautiful places. When I went to visit Luke when he was in college at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, I said, Luke, you made a pretty good decision, buddy, because this is about as beautiful a campus as you're going to get.
I'm going to guess that
beauties out there.
Coral Gables is not one of those places.
It's not?
Coral Gables, no. And, well, it's just hard. It's just so spread out, and I'm not really big. I'll try to get on campus today. We're going to have lunch, I think, in Little Havana. So I'll let you know. I'll report back on that one.
Okay. Okay.
I'd love to. Okay.
I'm already prepared for your report, just so you know. I know where your report goes when it comes to Miami. Brock, have a good weekend. What? What do you mean, what? You know how I know how you feel. You don't even need to say anything. I know how you feel.
All right.
Have a good game tomorrow. We'll talk to you next week. There you go. There's Brock. He's got the U.
Can you imagine Brockett playing for the U?
Yes.
That's ludicrous.
I think it's great.
Him and The Rock playing together.
I love the idea of Brock playing at the U.
Brock and The Rock.
Wouldn't that be good?
It'd be nuts.
You don't think he would have been good there?
No, I think he would have played fine, but he wouldn't have fit in.
I think he would have. Brock kind of fits in weird ways.
Who would he play under? Dennis Erickson there?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mid-90s?
Yeah, it would have been a perfect fit for him.
It would
have been
nuts.
It all would have been perfect.
He never would have made it back.
All right, let's see. We got a lot still to do today, Tom. We do. The get-in price is going to shock you next on Brock and Salk.